going to cover a few things in the news before we get into the sermon, which we'll record on a separate recording. Here's some various things sent to me. I'm keeping my eyes on the Temple Institute, so if you've never gone online to look at the Temple Institute, you can get a lot of things there. But it will show you the view of the Jews toward the temple and the priesthood, which is that you cannot receive any blessings from God, really, without the temple and the priest. That all blessings came through the priest. So that's where they're headed with this. Now, the Temple Institute is now making linen garments for priesthood in preparation for temple sacrifices. And so they're getting prepared. And an article shows all the things that they do for making it. They're getting linen from India. They're bringing it to Israel. They are then making it into linen thread, and then they're sending it up to Tel Aviv. And remember, I mentioned that Tel Aviv was the place where God intended the Jews to be at this time, up near that area on the coast. And that's why they have more peace up there than any place else. So they are going to make them, and they will be sold only to the true descendants of the high priest Aaron. I suppose they're going to check this with DNA test. So if you want to get one of those, you better have a kosher blood DNA test. Okay. But all of these things are really interesting. And it says here, as always, in recreating temple-ready vessels and garments. So if you go online, the Temple Institute, you can see all the vessels and everything that they're getting ready. The Temple Institute Research Department initiates the process with intensive research, assuring, in this case, that the priestly garments will be created in strict accordance to the requirements described in Torah and the unbroken oral tradition received at Sinai, preserved by Jewish sages throughout the generations. Now, God didn't give any oral tradition to Moses, you see. Every religion must have their own tradition. And even if they use parts of the Bible, their tradition will always supersede. That's how the Catholics do it as well, see. The Jews say, well, we can just go by the oral traditions. The Catholics say we don't even need the Bible, just the teachings of the fathers. No difference, just a little difference in their emphasis, you see. So anyway, this is our first public announcement of the production of priestly garments, and we have already registered our first orders, that is probably online. A second production run is already being planned to accommodate the anticipated demand, and it requires, let me just say here, final stages of manufacturing the garments involves the cutting, sewing, and embroidering of the woven fabric, creating the tunic, pants, turban, and belt. The turban is 8 meters or 26 feet long, and it's wrapped in length and wrapped around the priest's head. Each belt requires 16 meters or 52 feet length of linen, which is wrapped around the priest's waist. Now, I don't know how he can do anything with that, but nevertheless. During the time of the Second Temple, that would choke you up, 52 feet of linen wrapped around you. You know, you couldn't bed, do anything. And what if you're just a little stout? And they pull it real tight. Anyway. Okay. During the time of the Second Temple, when preparing to serve in the Holy Temple, the priest dressed in the chamber known as the Chamber of of Pinchas the wardrober, and each priest was assisted by a fellow priest with turban and belt. Oh, now the tunic is a garment that goes on, and it really is long. Goes when you talk about the checkered coat, or the coat of many colors that Joseph received from his father Jacob. In the Hebrew, it's really a tunic, and a tunic that reached down to his hands here and down to his feet. So I don't know what a tunic looks like. I don't know if we can look at any of the Arab dress, you know, and so forth to see if there's anything similar to it. So anyway, let's finish down here. A second production run is already being planned to accommodate the anticipated demand. In these very difficult and trying times, we are witnessing the enemies of God of Israel raid to the north, the south, the east, and the west of the land of Israel, shamelessly boasting of their wicked intentions, and even Israel's friends are calling upon her to relinquish control over the Temple Mount, the one place chosen by on earth by God for his presence to dwell. So in other words, God is not dwelling anywhere on the earth now till they build the temple, you see. And for all mankind to be seen in his service. The demand by the descendants of Aaron for garments that they will wear while tending to their daily responsibilities in the holy temple can only be understood as an expression of unshakable faith in the unfolding trajectory of the Jewish history and God's promise for all mankind, and my house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations. Well, the last time they had the temple, they didn't have that, did they? What makes anyone think they will make it that way today? All right, let's look at another one. Remember when I did the about prophecy and the 10 toes and the 10 regions of the world, and I brought up about Gary Kaw and the book that he wrote, I think, I forget exactly when it was, but yeah, En Route to Global Occupation. Well, what happened was, I think Ron Carey found his website, and I asked him to send my letter describing, you know, the 10 regions is that I thought they would occur. And so he called the office, and haven't been able to get a hold of him, or me get a hold of him. He can't get a hold of me because they're just playing phone tag, so I'm going to try and catch him if I can next week. Now, here's something that came up that was sent to me, which is very interesting. European leaders approve Mediterranean Union plan. Now, remember how I broke it down and I said that there would be, for the Islamic division, there would be a West Islamic region and an East Islamic region. Well, the West has been proposed almost exactly as I defined it. And I knew nothing of this. EU leaders approved a controversial French proposal for a Mediterranean Union aimed at strengthening cooperation with countries from Morocco to Turkey. That's what I said. All, and Egypt will be the fulcrum point for them, you see. The EU's Slovenian presidency said Thursday the project received wide support. It is now a question of working on this in different forums. Now a question of doing what is needed so this project can see the light of day. Germany was complaining about it, but it still went through. Germany had feared that it would counter Berlin's growing influence in Central Europe as the EU expands. So anyway, by limiting to the club to Southern European countries. Tomorrow morning, the decision will be formally taken to transform the Barcelona process into a union for the Mediterranean. That was decided unanimously tonight, Sarkozy said at a press conference. Then here's another article. Look for your food prices to go up at least 30% within the next year and a half, maybe even more. And that's because everyone wants to eat like Americans. And now, if you saw any, if you have seen any specials on China, you will be absolutely surprised that their cities are like modern Western cities now. They're bigger cities. Then I heard on a news report, I think it was Glenn Beck, that he was interviewing Nouriel Roubini. Now, you've never heard of him, but he is a global economist. And he was talking about the 12 steps to financial disaster in the world, beginning with America. And so I sent off for it, and I got it, and as I was reading it, there were so many abbreviations of things that I couldn't understand that I had Ron go ahead and get some definitions for me. For example, how many have heard of the FOMC? Federal Open Market Committee. That's where they sell the T-bills. And in getting all of this and reading it, now it's reasonably complicated, but there is no doubt that the whole world is coming to a point that unless they do something very quickly, the whole world could go into severe economic downturn, which could lead to worse than a recession. So the actions by the Federal Reserve taken this last week proved that, where in one day, liquidity of Bear Stearns was eaten up just like you pull the plug out of a bathtub. And that's because we don't understand the financial things that are going on in the world, which is this. The way that these big money people and these investment houses and those who run the hedge funds and so forth. What they do, they take IOUs, or in other words, a certified debt instrument, and then they make that into an asset. See, but an asset with that is only as good as the monetary system. And these are packaged and repackaged and bet upon and loaned upon. And everything is on debt. So when it starts falling, it's like building a house of cards. I mean, you can stack up the cards and build the house and, you know, all this sort of thing. Or like laying out a pattern of dominoes. And once it starts falling, there's virtually nothing that can be done to retrieve it. And we are getting close to that point. And the whole housing market is just totally upside down because of greed from everyone, from buyers and sellers and banks, appraisers, real estate people, builders, everybody. And sooner or later, the price agreed comes due, which is, what is the real true value? See, for example, just give you an example. We bought our house and land 30 years ago for $75,000 total. And we built a big house, 4,200 square feet, because we have a big family. And we're all independent, and so we all need our space. We're not the communal kind. And that's just the nature of us. So if you figure there's something strange with me, that's what it is. I'm independent. Okay. No. Yes. See. So,
And
that's why we built a big kitchen, because when everybody was in the kitchen, we wouldn't want anybody stepping on anybody's toes. You know, mom and dad and four kids, so you need a lot of space. Well, we bought that and built that for $75,000. We had enough money from previous purchase and sale that we had enough money to put down, so our original mortgage was only, I think it was like about $45,000. See, okay. At the peak of the housing market, a house like that was valued and selling for close to $1 million. Now, if we sold the house without moving to some place where they had a lower real estate market, we would have to pay $1 million to replace what we had. So we never tried doing it. And everyone would say, oh, how much equity do you have in your home? See? Well, if you consider it worth $1 million, and we owed nothing on it, we would have $1 million worth of equity. But what is that? Can you count that as wealth? No, that is only a supposition on paper based upon certain figures at a certain time, given a certain market, and so forth. Now, if we did sell and someone bought it and say they had a $500,000 to put down, that means they would have to get a loan for $500,000. And just figuring the whole price of everything, they would have to have enough money to make house payments of about $3,500 a month. And the taxes at $1 million would be 1% or 1.1, which would be $11,000 a year, which just rounded off to 12. With special applications to the taxes. So you add that $3,500 and put $1,000 on there for taxes, and then you put on the utilities, and then you put on the insurance, and you are looking at about $5,500 a month for the house payment. Now, only in a rising economy can that be temporarily sustained. And virtually, unless you're making, because you see, normally speaking, if you do a normal loan of that kind, a person would have to make, we'll just round this off to a figure of $5,500 a month. Just make it $6,000 a month. Because there are other, you'd have to have upkeep other things. So round it off to $6,000 a month. You would have to be making approximately, the minimum would be $18,000 a month to be able to support that kind of payment. So you would really have to have some kind of really high job up there. So this gives you an example of what happens when greed sets in. Okay. So that's another reason why we didn't sell the house. So that gives you an example of all of the inflation that is in there. Artificial wealth, artificial inflation. Our house was never worth $1 million. See? And people cannot sustain those kind of house payments in a normal market. So what happens when the business cycle goes down, then people earn less, people are laid off, and generally in most instances you have people who mother and father both work, or in the case of many Latinos, you buy a house at a high price and then you have six or eight people living in the house, all contributing about $600 or $700 a month to meet the house payment. And sooner or later, they're not going to be able to make it. Well, just multiply this by millions of homes and billions, hundreds of billions of dollars, and then taking these mortgage notes, certifying that they are AAA rated, and sell them to banks everywhere in the world, and that gives you an understanding of what's going to happen. See? So all of that waste, which it is, and all of that artificial pricing has got to be purged out of the market, and that's what's going to have to happen. And even the people who were greedy, who knew, for example, there was a story of one Latino field worker that he and his family bought a house for $750,000 zero down. So they had to make payments of, you know, pretty close to $6,000 a month. Well, they start out at the teaser rate. See? A lot of them start out interest only or below interest only. And so when the hammer came down and the house was foreclosed upon, they said, well, we didn't know. Now, even a Latino lettuce picker understands the value of money, and he can count. So there's greed by buyers, greed by sellers, greed by builders, greed by owners who want to sell at a high price, and all of these things. If you're heading at the top of the market and you hit it, maybe you do well. But sooner or later, it's going to come down, and the market is going to crash, and someone's going to be holding the bag. And what's going to happen? The banks are holding a lot of worthless debt notes, and the people who now in the international monetary system of the world are saying, we want to guarantee that these are going to be paid, so you put up X number of hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that these papers are good and will be paid in case they're foreclosed upon. And that's what happened to Bear Stearns on Friday. They got the call on hundreds of millions of dollars of these bad notes, and in one day, their liquidity went down the drain. Now, this could happen to any of the investment houses or large banks. So, as I've been saying for quite a while, get out of debt, get out of debt, get out of debt. Set aside some reserve. If you have more than $10,000, don't leave it in the bank. Very interesting. Someone went to a bank recently and said, well, now I've got X amount of dollars in this bank, which was something like $50,000 or so, and asked the bank manager, well, if the bank failed, would they be able to pay me back my money that's in here? And the manager and bank manager said, mm-mm. Even if they did, it might take 5 to 8 years. See? So I'm not saying this to scare anybody. But in the event that these things happen, if you don't know that they are coming, you're going to be far more scared and worried at the time that it drops on you than if you're warned ahead of time. So the 12 steps to financial disaster, I would say 4 of them are already there. Already there. First is housing market recession in the U.S. Second is loss of financial system from the subprime disaster. Third, the recession will lead, as it already is, to a sharp increase in defaults and forms of unsecured debt, credit cards, auto loans, student loans, etc. Did you know that if you had enough money, you could buy at 3% of face value, you could go, say, to Citibank, or a combination of other banks which have these credit cards, and they've got all of these non-collectible credit cards. And they bundle them up, and you can buy them for probably 3 cents on the dollar. But they've all defaulted on them. So that's what the bank thinks of what they're worth. But if someone did that, then they could go ahead and discount it and tell the people, all right, we'll reinstate your credit card and knock off three-quarters of your debt, provided that you make payments regularly. See, so someone is going to have to eat the debt somewhere along the line. So that's happening. All right? And then asset-backed securities, what is an asset? An asset is like if I sold my home and the bank had the $500,000 note, that is an asset. Okay? Then also, asset-backed securities are you borrow because you have so much inventory, you have so much equity, and then you go to the bank and you borrow the money from that, and then you have asset bank, and then they sell those. And that becomes a problem. Fourth, while there is serious uncertainty about the losses of the monolines will take place and so forth, this here has to do with the downgrading of credit ratings for bonds. AAA, you pay 4%. If it goes down to AA or single A or triple B, your interest rate can go up as high as 20%. Now, you think about all the cities and municipalities and counties and, you know, agencies that have those bonds out there like that. Fifth, the commercial real estate loan market will soon enter a meltdown similar to the prime, subprime that we have. Sixth, it is possible that some large regional or even national banks that are very exposed to mortgages and residential and commercial will go bankrupt. That happened to Stearns on Friday. They were technically bankrupt. Seventh, bank losses on their portfolio of leveraged loans are already large and growing. The ability of financial institutes to syndicate and securitize their leveraged loans is at serious risk. Eighth, once a severe recession is underway, a massive wave of corporate defaults will take place. Nine, shadow banking. These are the non-financial institutions will soon get into trouble. Tenth, the stock market, U.S. and abroad, will start pricing a severe U.S. recession. 11, the worsening credit crunch that is affecting most credit markets and credit derivative markets will lead to a dry up of liquidity in a variety of financial markets, meaning there is no money. So when you hear that the Fed bailed out Bear Stearns to give it liquidity, that means they created money out of nothing to give to them, to give the appearance that on the books they now have the money to meet their liquidity stance. 12, vicious cycle of losses, capital reduction, credit contraction, forced liquidation, etc. So, I got that, and it was really something. Now, for those of you who are online, I'll have Ron put all of those up online with a definition as to what these things mean. So we need to realize that when things like this take place, we need to get our minds on Christ, on what we are preparing for, and what we are doing, and where we are headed, because if we just look in the world and see what's going on, you can get as depressed as the recession is coming and get down and think, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. See? Well, don't do that. Just realize this is going to happen. This is going to help pave the way for the coming of the beast. The tribulation is not around the corner. The tribulation is, I talked to one man the other day, he says, oh, the two witnesses are going to be here on such and such a date. And I said, no, they're not. Tribulation is going to start on such and such a date. I said, where's the king of the north and king of the south? They're not there yet. Well, so-and-so said so. I said, no. See, question was asked, when will you know when the two witnesses are here? be no doubt. Get out the message that we gave on two witnesses and Elijah. That'll help answer it. You will know it because it's the Bible, I think, shows us clear enough that it's going to be the governor of Judea and the priest at the high temple, and the coming Elijah is going to be the one who will, how shall we say, be the evangelical pastor of all of the repenting Jews in wherever they are, but especially in the Middle East. You know, there is going to be mass repentance when that takes place. There's going to be, you know, God is going to raise them up. God says he's going to save Judah first. So, you know, those things are eventually coming. But what we are looking at is like a giant 1,000-piece puzzle. You have to put the pieces together.
Rick, you got to always...
Yeah, comment was made. You have to look at the message. What is being said? And with the message of the two witnesses, they're going to have miracles and powers. You read Revelation 11. When it comes on the scene, the world's going to know it.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to know it. It's going to be awesome. So what we're looking at is this. This economic downturn is setting the stage for something else. So we need to watch what is going to happen and what is going to be developed. But you know it's going to end up with more international control than we've had in the past. So we'll just have to wait and see. But all the things that we're going through, let's come down here to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. And here's a key one that we need to always keep in mind. So when the disciples wanted to know when is going to be the completion of the age, sign of his coming, verse 4, Jesus answered and said to them, "Be on guard so that no one deceives you." That's the first thing. See. The whole world is deceived, but Satan likes to get into church and bring in false preachers and so forth. That's why comment was made, look at the message. What is the message? See. No one deceives you, for many shall come in my name, saying, "I am the Christ," and shall deceive many. Which means the majority of those who claim they are Christians are not. Because, you see, Christians are those, true Christians are those who have God's Spirit and who love God and keep his commandments. And if you don't keep his commandments, you're not his. Just that simple. You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. Well, that's on the nightly news, isn't it? Mm-hmm. See that you do not let these things disturb you. The only way that that can happen is if you really have your heart and mind on God and Christ and his plan, and you realize that God has called you to grow, to overcome, to develop the character to help solve the problems of the world at the return of Christ. For it is necessary that these things take place, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in different places. And you can add into that storms and tornadoes and hurricanes and tsunamis. Now, all of these things are the beginning of sorrows. Now, verse 8 is a very interesting verse. I remember asking the question when 9/11 took place, is that the beginning of sorrows? Well, I don't know, but if you look at what's been happening in the world, there's certainly a lot more sorrows spreading further than ever before. While at the same time, you see nations rising, 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 rising. See, so it's there are a lot of pieces to the puzzle to put together. Then they shall deliver you up to affliction and shall kill you. You shall be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Now that's happened from the time of Christ, clear down to our day. And if you... Okay. Rather than write in for it, I will make sure that I put on this CD, because with MP3 we can put put up to 10 sermons on it if we need to. I'll put on there the two generations. But we are reaching a point now where that last generation is going to start taking control of the whole world. How that falls together, we'll have to see. The last generation before the destruction of the temple was not that generation, though many people thought it was, and the reason is because not everything was on the scene at that time. Many of the things were. So when you see some of the things on the scene, but not all the rest of the things on the scene, then know the end is not yet. For example, let's go back and take a look at what Herbert Armstrong said at the beginning and through World War II, that you had the King of the North, who was Hitler, with his friend Mussolini. You had the King of the South in Ethiopia, and the Germans came down and they invaded North Africa. And if they would go to Egypt, then that would fulfill the prophecy of the King of the North coming to Egypt. Well, they never got there. So when the atomic bomb went off, he said, well, there's got to be more to it than what we've understood. So he leaped ahead to 1975, and everybody got psyched out on 1975, and that didn't happen. So here we are at 2008, and too many people are getting psyched out because of different ministers in the church saying, well, I'm one of the two prophets, and who's the other one? Well, I don't know, but I'll name him. You know, and the tribulation is going to start. We won't be able to keep the Passover. And all of those sort of things coming on, you see. We do not know how long the beginning of sorrows is and the extent and the degree to which it will come upon us. So we need to be careful of that. Verse 10, Then shall many be led into sin, because there is no word of God out there for them, and shall betray one another, hate one another, and many false prophets shall arise and deceive many, and because lawlessness shall be multiplied, because they've rejected everything concerning the laws of God and laws of man, and many political parties are lawless. And the way you control lawless people is with ruthless police. Because God meant for everyone to know the commandments of God, govern his own life internally with the commandments of God, so you can have some sort of law-abiding conscience. But where you say there are no laws, and that lies right at the feet of all Protestantism, they've created the lawlessness here, plus the atheist and the secularist and the government kicking out God, shall be multiplied, the love of many shall grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, that one shall be saved. Okay, so this tells us there's a duration of time for these events to take place. Now, on the other hand, then you have to take the warning, which is this. Because it may be longer and further away than we've anticipated. Don't ease up and say, oh, well, it's 100 years off. See? So we have to take everything day by day, faith day by day. We have to ask God every day, where are we going? What are we doing? What should we be doing? Help me to understand. And I know that's my prayer every day for the brethren and for what I do and so forth, that what we do is according to the Word of God. I don't want to go out and do something that is not right. I don't want to go out and make proclamations which are not true. I don't want to accrue to myself any great authority to be some big apostle or prophet or whatever. But I do know this, that if I preach the Word of God truly, then that will be what God wants me to do. Likewise with all of us. when we see these things, don't get upset. Don't get fearful. They're going to take place. Ask God for his protection. Ask God to give you wisdom. Ask God to help you. If you are in dire straits, ask God to help lift you out of it and to give you grace and favor so you can live your life. And that's what we have to do. Okay, so much for the news. This audio is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024-1442.